This episode of the MS Dev Show is brought to you by Infragistics. Their developer toolkits provide world-class controls targeting Windows, Web, iOS, Android, Xamarin Forms, and more. Whether you're an individual developer or part of an enterprise team, they have something for you. Check out the latest today at infragistics.com.
Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode 59. This week we talk about the hardware and software we use every day, a useful Big O notation site, Build Tour Chicago, and spoiler alert, I mentioned Sidewaffle again.
Hey, Carl, how's it going?
Pretty good. How about you, Jason?
It's going good. So I'm out here in Redmond. My audio definitely is not going to sound as good as it normally sounds. So I am sitting in Studio D, I believe, which I believe is the is where they work on the Xbox stuff. So it's kind of interesting walking around. And every other office, somebody's playing a game, and the other offices have Excel spreadsheets and code and things like that.
Nice.
When I first walked in, I didn't realize it was the Xbox building, and I'm like, why is everybody just sitting around playing games? And then it became obvious to me.
Because it's their jobs.
Exactly. Okay, so what do we got for feedback?
So our first piece of feedback is from Dan Clark. He said, listening to an MS Dev Show podcast on HoloLens on the way home. Just downloaded Unity now to play with. I wonder how much dev kits will be.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, we're wondering as well.
Yep. And this week's winner of the Infragistics contest for feedback is Jason Rotello. And He reached out to us on Twitter. He said, MS Dev Show, thanks for putting together a great podcast. If we cross paths at that conference, I'll buy you guys a beer. Well, we'll both be there, so.
Yeah, so that sounds good to me. So, yeah, we're not above taking bribes, although it's no purchase required to enter.
No, the only thing you need is to reach out to us in any way, shape, or form. Facebook, iTunes, our website. It seriously doesn't take much to be entered into this. I just checked it up today because I was just kind of curious. How much is the Infragistics full license? And it's $2,000. Yep. To get that. So, I mean, that's a pretty nice thing to get for just saying, hey, guys, you know, here's my feedback.
Yeah. And to put that in perspective, I mean, we're giving away $52,000 worth of software in 6 months, which is pretty insane. Okay. So what do we got for news? So Chicago Build Tour.
Yeah. So this week I was able to actually help with the build tour that came through Chicago.
Oh, really?
Which was pretty cool. Just a reminder for people who don't know, I'm a Microsoft MVP, and as an MVP, I was invited to come down and sit and ask the experts table. So in between the sessions, people could come up and ask some questions. And I will say, there's some people out there doing some pretty amazing things.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just wanted to highlight, I mean, there's only a couple of them left. And if there's one in your area, I'd highly recommend checking it out. They are taking last minute, you know, signups. Okay. And there were people who hadn't signed up that they let in. So it was probably one of the nicest conferences that I've ever been to. It was just really well done. So thanks to Caitlin, who's traveling to most of these. She's been doing an outstanding job. But these are at really interesting venues, too. It's not just your typical, like, you know, hotel conference or something like that. This was at the Field Natural History Museum.
In
Chicago. And that was just a beautiful building.
Yep.
I mean, it just really added to the experience.
Okay. That's pretty cool. So not your standard conference venue. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Now Big O cheat sheet. I know we've talked about Big O before.
Pretty big on Big O, just understanding what, the algorithm that we're working with, how good or how terrible is it? You know, what's the best thing to use in a certain place. So
and a lot of people think like, oh, this performance, like you're just kind of nitpicking, but this literally means like to mean the difference between your application working and not working.
Yeah.
Or, from a performance standpoint.
Or returning, you know, in a few seconds or hours.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is huge.
Yeah. So this is just one, you know, just one of the ones that lists all the, you know, big algorithms like for sorting and stuff like that. And just it just kind of gives you and it color codes them. So it's nice. It's bigocheatsheet.com. So if you're looking at the difference between some of them in your code, you might want to check it out.
Okay. Pretty cool. And then the next one is actually related to what we're going to be talking about today. So Stack Exchange Developer Desktop Build. So you were saying this is like the default. This is if you work at Stack Exchange, this is what you get by default.
Yeah. So, you know, if you work there in a, you know, some sort of creative or development position, you get to basically pick whatever you want. But they kind of have like a reference PC that if they, you know, build it for, you know, it's, you know, this is essentially what they're considering, you know, a very high end PC. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty sweet. And they not only list out all the parts, but like all the prices as well. So,
and the desktop stuff is really reasonable. I mean, what's most expensive here? They talk about the Retina MacBook Pro is like fully loaded. Like those things get crazy expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just goes to show, you know, places like that, that are trying to get top talent, they're giving them the top gear to do what they need to do to get their jobs done. So not yep. saying every place is going to be as generous with equipment, but if you are at a place that lets you do something like that, you definitely know that you're in a better spot.
Yeah. I've always been a huge advocate of giving the developers whatever they want from a hardware standpoint and refreshing it frequently because it's such a small percentage of what they get paid, and any productivity increases are absolutely worth it. So yeah, it says most of our developers use 3 30-inch Dell monitors. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that would be so nice. You can always use more pixels, more pixels, more pixels. Okay, so that's one of the things we're going to be talking about on the show is actually like the hardware and the software that you and I use. We didn't have a guest this week, but we still wanted to make sure that we had some content for you guys. And I know, you know, I've talked to people like Jeff Blankenberg, and he's put, you know, blog posts out there saying, hey, here's my setup. And they always seem to get a lot of traction. So we figured we'd talk about the stuff that we use, what works, what doesn't. And and actually, right before we get to that, I did want to talk about a hackfest that I worked on. It was an internal hackfest here, but I actually put all of my code out on GitHub. So I was talking to you a little bit about this, Carl, but it's basically the really, really short description is basically using the Microsoft Band to control a PowerPoint presentation. So being able to stand up on stage and actually do gestures, so like waving your arm a certain direction at a certain speed, and that will advance or make the slides go back. And I had some people tell me, you know, there was a lot of technical hurdles. I even had the team tell me a couple of things that wouldn't work, but we figured out how to get everything to work. We did this in 12 hours and we actually got it working very, very well. So basically it's a phone application. So it's a Windows phone application that connects to your band. It receives the gyroscope data. It processes it with reactive extensions, and then it makes a REST call out to an Azure service. And that Azure service powers a basically like a task pane app that you would install inside of PowerPoint just through the App Store. And so this is even better than some other remotes because it's not a COM add-in. It's like a sort of a native current generation app that you put in there. And once you install those two apps and pair them up just using like a 4-digit code, you can sit there and gesture and actually do next previous on your PowerPoint slide. So I demoed that today, and that was a huge, huge hit. So again, that's out in GitHub. I'm sure we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But ultimately, I want to get that into the stores, and I'll just make it a free app. And of course, it's all open source. But I was just hacking away. I thought it was something pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome. You'll definitely have to bring it up on the show when it's out in the store.
Yeah, definitely. And I you know, it was fun being able to play with the band and getting that live telemetry data. It was fun playing with REST and SignalR with Azure, and then also actually building out an Office 365 app because these things, they are getting more and more powerful every day. And these are there's actually going to be a huge market for these applications. So, you're gonna see this over the next year. Office 365, the add-ins are going to be huge, and they work across, you know, like iPad, the phone, so all the tablet versions, the phone versions, all of those. But anyway, let's get into the hardware. So I sort of intentionally didn't look at your list ahead of time, Carl, so that you can walk me through this. So like what do you use? Like what's your main machine?
So my main machine I built about a year ago. I had all of the parts still saved in my Newegg and Amazon histories. So as I'll have links to these all in the show. I'm not going to get too detailed, but I know you had built a PC about a year before that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of use that as a basis, but obviously some things there weren't, and other things, you know, had gotten bumped up in the meantime. So, you know, I'm using a 240 gigabyte SSD as my main, you know, OS and application install disk. Yep. And then I have a terabyte media disk, and I don't store a whole lot of media. I know some people, you know, do media server stuff. I don't. So for me, that's plenty.
Okay.
One of the things I did have to make a compromise on is my motherboard supports 32 gigs of RAM, but I went with 16 because a year ago RAM prices were just insane.
Yeah, and what was interesting is actually since I built mine, the RAM prices have gone up.
Yeah, so they had tripled.
Yeah, exactly. So what I did is each 16 gig grouping of RAM when I purchased it was $50. So I actually just went ahead and put 32 gigs in it right off the bat. But then I remember when you were building it, the prices had gone, they had tripled. And so I think 16 gigs was the right choice there.
Yeah. And for the processor, it's, you know, for me, a developer, obviously an i7. But one of the things that I did want is I did want a little bit lower power draw. So I went with the 65 watt version of it.
Okay.
And I know that was one of the goals with yours is, you know, this wasn't just to be like a ridiculously overpowered for the sake of being overpowered, but giving you as much power as you need, but still being as efficient as possible.
Exactly. Because I leave my computer on 24/7 because it's performing various tasks. But what people don't realize, I know people who have like the first generation i7, and that thing used, you know, 4, 5, 6 times as much power as the current generation. And normally you don't care in a desktop, but the way I look at it, the kind of the rule of thumb that I always do, and eventually this is going to come out of date, but where I live, my rule of thumb is for every watt is basically $1 per year. And I know my original i7 build was, I think it was pulling 300 watts at idle. So that was basically $300 per year just to have it sitting there doing nothing. So yeah, that's definitely important because I think my new build, I think I've hooked it up and it's somewhere around 40 or 50 watts at idle.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's basically saving, you know, $200-$250 bucks a year. And a lot of people don't realize that. You might be able to use that to actually justify building a new machine. Okay. And then you picked an ASRock for your motherboard. I've had really good luck with those.
Yeah. I've had quite a few people recommend that brand to me. And then I just kind of went off the checklist of I wanted an integrated chipset because I didn't want to buy a video card, which further reduces the power that I need.
Oh, absolutely. That's a huge difference. The built-in graphics are actually pretty good on these processors now, and they pull very, very little power. I mean, you're not going to be doing any kind of high-end gaming with them, but they do a great job. Yeah.
And I also wanted a ton of USB 3 ports. So that was like the next thing. You know, I love USB 3. I know it's not out on a lot of devices yet, but I just want to be prepared for wherever it is.
Absolutely.
And I got Nantech, black mid-tower ATX computer case. It's nice. It was just fairly inexpensive. It was like $40-$45. And it has, you know, spots for routing your cables, so it's nice and clean. It's just got a nice big interior, plenty of fans that you can turn on and off, high and low speeds each as you want. It's got on everywhere where you have an intake, it has a filter, so you know it goes longer between having to clean it out to get that dust out of your machine. And in fact, I just did that about a week ago, and it was nice just, you know, having to pull the cover off, clean out the filter, and then just kind of lightly go over the rest of the machine.
Yeah, I should probably do that at some point. I've never cleaned out the filter. That's the only problem with the filter is remembering to clean it.
Yeah. And I'm huge on cleaning out my PCs because I had gotten a call from somebody that says my computer doesn't work anymore. And they had so much dust built up that a fire started in their power supply.
Oh boy. Yeah, that's bad.
So, I mean, it doesn't have to be very often, you know, every 6 to 9 months is about when I do it. And that's not a whole lot.
Yeah.
One of the things that, I got from, where when we used to work together, we had the Logitech HD Pro C920 webcams, and they're just amazing webcams. I highly recommend that to everybody. They're high def. They have built-in hardware encoding in them. I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, that's the camera you need to do like 1080p video over Skype, and they will absolutely do it. And it looks like a window basically whenever you do that. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I think my next two choices are things I'm kind of opinionated at, and I think I disagree with a lot of people out there. I know people love their wireless mouse and keyboards. I'm all about the wired mouse and keyboards now. I just can't stand, you know, right when you need it most, the batteries fail, and then you never have that kind of battery. And it's not a work PC where I could just go to somewhere in the office and pick out from the stash.
So I have a question on that. When was the last time that you tried, a battery powered mouse and keyboard?
So the keyboard that I had before this one was the same model, but the wireless version. And I really love the keyboard, but I just wanted it to be wired. So that was about 2 years ago.
Yeah. And the keyboard, usually don't move your keyboard much. If you're trying to like clean up your desk, it might not be an issue, but yeah, I as well switched to a wired keyboard. Seem to be really no disadvantage to that. I have a wired mouse.
The other thing that you get though with being a wired keyboard is I love the illuminated keyboards, and you can have the options of them being lit up all the time. Mm-hmm. So that is, if you're wireless, it's only going to light up, you know, for a few seconds after you're done typing. So I have the Logitech illuminated keyboard, and that's the K740. I think they might have a newer one out by now. But I absolutely love this keyboard. If I have a chance, I will make an employer buy this for me if it's even a remote option. It's not too pricey. It's about $80, which for some people it might be. But it has a really nice key feel, a fairly short travel of the key. I'm not into the mechanical keyboards. I have the Code keyboard that's on my other PC that's in the basement that I don't use. But, you know, I bought it because I thought it'd be awesome. I wanted to check it out, and I'm just not impressed with those mechanical keyboards very much.
Yeah.
And then to match it, I have, mouse-wise, the Razer Abyssus Optical PC Gaming Mouse. This is the lowest-end gaming mouse that Razer makes, and it's just rock solid. What I've had on other mice is the buttons actually wear out. Because there's so many, it's just cheap plastic. And this one I think is still plastic, but for a gaming mouse, they've designed it because gamers tend to just mash those buttons hard. Yeah. And that's what I like about buying gaming mice is they're designed to just take abuse.
Yep.
And the other thing I didn't think I'd like is it has a slider on the bottom for you to adjust the DPI. So you can make it so you just twitch a little bit and it'll fly across the screen. Or you could just really slow it down. You can move it a lot and it barely moves for really precision things. And I don't really change that a lot, but it's nice having that option.
Okay, cool. Anything else you want to mention about the desktop?
The other thing is, you know, something people don't think of, their power strip or surge protector. I always buy the power squid. So essentially what you have instead of just having a strip where all the outlets are right next to each other on a, you know, set of plastic, is it has mini extension cords coming out. And that way, you know that if you have like a huge brick, it's not going to block like two other ports that surround it.
It's not too expensive either. I was surprised. Yeah, it's less than $20 for this, and it's got five outlets on it.
No, so that's my main desktop. I'm not going to put it on the list, but I do have two monitors. One's a 24-inch Dell, and the other is a 19-inch Dell that I've rotated vertically. I'm a huge fan of vertical monitors, as I've mentioned before on the show. But it's frustrating that you can't buy them so that the pixels are natively vertical.
Yeah, that's something that people don't realize. And even after I explain it to them, I don't think they really believe me because the pixels on your screen, on your monitor, are horizontal. Yeah. But each pixel is made up of, you know, RGB, and they're sideways. So, yeah, when you turn it vertical, it ends up, you know, it's getting better now that we're higher resolution. But on the lower resolutions, it actually changes the way the text looks.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, I mean, I think most people don't care because they don't have a use for it. They're just used to it being horizontal, and that's the way it's always going to be for them. Yep. But I think in our field, documentation, a lot of that's a very vertical format. Code is a very vertical format. So for me, it just makes sense to have a vertical monitor, you know, optimized for that kind of workflow. Also, it's also great for putting up like a Twitter client. That's generally very vertical as well. So, you know, for the way that I work, it works well for me doing that.
Okay. And then what about your travel computer? What do you use?
So I have a Surface Pro 3, the i5 8 gigabyte RAM, 256 gigabyte SSD version. Mm-hmm. And the only things that I carry, that, you know, I do carry the stylus with it. You know, it has that attached. And I have the Arc Touch Mouse Surface Edition. And I carry that in what's the Inatech Surface Pro 3 protective carrying sleeve. And what's that has a, it feels like it's made out of wool and it's gray and it's right. Just, it's just really nice and stylish. And I can slide my Surface in there and not worry about it at all.
Perfect. Yeah, I have something similar, but I'll talk about that when I'm up. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about on Surface Pro 3?
No, I try to keep my travel stuff as light as possible. And yeah. It's just sometimes nice having that an extra mouse. And I just love that you take that mouse and you just bang it flat. I've had the previous versions of the Microsoft mice that do that. And I think that's just, you know, they've got a really solid product line going there with those mice.
Yeah, my Surface Pro 3 with the keyboard, with the power supply, in the case, I think with the mouse, I want to say is still lighter than a vanilla MacBook Air, which is really amazing. Like you mentioned, getting really light for the bag, that makes a big difference. It helps with your neck and your back, and it's a big deal to me as well. Okay, so what else do you got?
So other things that I generally carry around with me, especially if it's going to be for something like a conference or something, is I carry an external battery charger. So the one that I currently have is made by PNY, and it's 7,800 milliamp hours, and it has a 2.4 amp port and a 1 amp port. It's nice. It has a brushed aluminum outside to it, but it also has an LCD screening on there to tell you how much power is left. It's got a lot of power to it. But it's pretty good size. The one thing that I would like to replace it with, and I'm just not going to because it's not out there, but if you're looking at buying something, to give you an alternative, I've really fallen in love with Anker as a brand. They have some really high quality stuff, and they have a 25,600 milliamp hour, 3-port, 4-amp portable charger. If you just need a ton of power, and it's something that'll charge it fast.
Yeah. So the capacity, they have some capacity numbers here. iPhone 6, it will charge it 10 times. Galaxy S5, 6 charges. iPad mini 3, it'll charge it 2.5 times. That is absolutely insane. This thing has to be heavy though.
I'm sure it is, but, yeah. Mine dies or whatever.
It's 1 pound.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's $80. So it's pretty pricey, whereas the other one was in the range of, I don't know exactly, like 25 or something like that, or yeah. Maybe 30. But yeah. It's definitely nice to have that portable power on you. I know when I'm at conferences or just away, I tend to use my phone more, which drains it more. And yep. It's nice not having to worry, am I going to run out of juice?
Okay.
So the next item is, if it's work-related and I might have to be on some sort of call, I like bringing with me a Jabra Speak 410 USB speakerphone. This thing is just a little puck that plugs into your computer, and I use Link, and it's optimized to do it. So it's a speaker and microphone in one. It's really nice if there's going to be multiple people.
It's got capacitive buttons. Because I know, when we worked together, we had tried two different versions of this thing. There was the Jabra one, and there's the Plantronics, and they're both $100. And the Plantronics one is absolute crap.
So
whereas the Jabra is just amazing.
So, well, the Plantronics one may be absolute crap. My next item, my Bluetooth headset, is the Plantronics Voyager Legend. And that's okay. Probably the best headset, Bluetooth headset I've ever used. It plugs it into multiple things. It's got a pretty good battery life.
Okay, yep. Cool. I've been looking at this one. It is pricey.
Yeah, I think it's about $100.
$135 on Amazon.
I think you can get them for $100.
Okay.
And the last thing is, and this is just in general, both with my desktop and whatever, I can't stand slack in my USB cords. I don't like them dangling and coiling and stuff. So I have a ton of USB cables, a lot of them really short. So I'm talking about, I have a lot of six inch cables, a lot of 1 foot cables, And just, you know, if I need something, I'll try to get as close to the size as the distance it needs. So that's something I recommend. And once again, you know, I mentioned before that Anker for that battery charger, they make really excellent USB cables as well.
Oh, yeah. I see 1 foot cables you can get from them. That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's handy. I think the one I keep in my bag is actually a 1 footer. Yeah, you're right. It's really, really nice for traveling.
Yeah, but I tend to keep a lot of 6-inch ones with me, too. So,
okay. And then do you want to talk about your phone?
Yeah.
Phones, I should say.
Well, well, it's just phone, but it's like the accessories that come with it, too. So
right.
I've mentioned before, I'm not going to go into too much detail, that I have the HTC One M8 for Windows. It's been a while since there's been a flagship, and this one still feels like a brand new flagship. It's really nice. I also have the dot view case for it. It's nice. It doesn't add a whole lot of thickness, and it protects the screen, which I really like. And I have it in a bright orange, and I like having bright phones, so that helps, because otherwise it's a metallic phone.
Yeah.
It takes a micro USB or a micro SD card, so I keep a 64 gig one in there, so I can keep a bunch of media on it.
Yeah, that's great.
And then one of the things I do, if I'm going to listen to music, I want something. I like to punch it up and make sure it's clean. So in my bag, I keep a portable headphone amplifier, a Fio E11K. And that's something that I learned about from our friends at codingblocks.net. One of them is really into audio, and he recommended that for me. And with that, I keep a really short 3-inch cable to connect the phone to that device. Once again, keeping it as short as possible. So I'll keep that in my bag. And when I want to listen to good music, I'll use that headphone amp.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't even list my headphones, but we'll have to talk about those.
Carl, I got to interrupt this for just a second. And I want to talk about Infragistics.
Yeah. If you comment on Facebook, on Twitter, on our website, you have a chance to win the ultimate license from Infragistics. And this is pretty cool because it covers a lot of stuff. They have controls for Android, iOS, Windows Phone, Windows 8, ASP.NET, MVC, WPF, jQuery, HTML5, just tons of stuff. And they even have stuff for Xamarin Forms. So if you're trying to hit all three major mobile platforms with one, they got controls to help you out there. If you need tabular stuff with their grids, they got really cool controls to help make that look just really sharp. Charting, gauges, barcodes, it's all pretty simple using their controls. And if you just have some simple prototyping needs, they have a product called Indigo Studio too. It lets you get that prototype done so you can show this to the stakeholders and, you know, sell your ideas.
Yeah, what I love about that, you can just send them a link and they can actually navigate through the app. But like you mentioned earlier, all of these controls across all these different platforms, this is great. I mean, most people don't just develop one type of app now. So being able to go and use these controls in every type of app, all under one ultimate license, is really big plus.
If we don't select you each week, you could try again next week. And if you can't wait, they have free demos. So you can try it out for a month, download the demos, and try it today.
Yeah, check it out at infragistics.com. They're a free trial, so you have nothing to lose. And remember, each week, if we pick your comment on the show, you get the ultimate edition for free, which includes everything. We thank them for their support of the MS Dev Show.
Anything else on your list?
Hardware-wise? Not for hardware. And, you know, I'm sure I'm forgetting something, but that's the stuff that I know I use all the time.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we should go through my hardware, and then we'll jump in the software.
Yeah.
How's that sound? So my list is not quite as complete as yours, but you did a really good comprehensive job. So I can kind of walk through mine. So yeah, I had done a build, a few years ago. Actually, I have a blog post about it. So it was March 14th of 2013. So that's starting to be, I mean, that's over 2 years ago now, which is pretty crazy. So mine is an Ivy Bridge. I know yours is the Haswell. So yours is a newer generation, but I have all the prices and everything out there. But yeah, I went with the 32 gigs of RAM. I think we have the same processor speed. We're both about like 3.5 gigahertz, which these days, I can't even tell the difference. I mean, realistically, and the processor speeds haven't changed like dramatically when you're only switching one series. One thing I do, or I should say a couple things that I do, I always try to use really high quality components whenever I build a machine. And that's really the difference between building a machine and buying, you know, like an HP off the rack. I mean, you open up an HP and you take out the power supply, those things weigh, you know, like the power supply will weigh 3 pounds. Whereas like the, you know, I have a Seasonic power supply in mine and that thing probably weighs, you know, 10 pounds. And you look in the kind of the air gaps on it and you can tell it's super beefy. Plus the power supply I bought this time is actually a modular one. So I only have to hook up the cables that I actually use, which is really cool. So you don't have extra wires hanging off the power supply. And I always like to have a really good CPU fan. Cause again, we talked about power usage, the bigger the fan, and the better the cooling on the CPU, the slower that fan can go. I think I typically have it on like the lowest possible speed. So my PC is silent, generates almost no heat, which is really nice. It's nice in the summer as well. Let's see here. Case, you know, I just, the cheapest case I can find. That's just how I am. So actually my list here shows a Crucial 128 gig hard drive, but I've since upgraded that. So I actually went out and I bought a Samsung 850 Pro, which if you look, the Samsung drives are very highly reviewed these days. A lot of people go out and they buy like the 850 Evo. And that one I think is like $100-$150 cheaper than the one that I bought. But the thing is, you know, like with the jobs that you and I have, Carl, I mean, you're sitting there banging on that SSD all day. So the 850 Pro is designed first of all, handle, you know, higher read writes and just a bigger duty cycle. So mine actually has a 10-year warranty on it. It's a half terabyte. It's got the benchmarks on it are slightly better. But basically, I just bought the heavy-duty tool. And, you know, it's funny whenever we look at this stuff and we say, oh, geez, you know, that hard drive is, it's $100 more. Maybe I'll just get the Evo. But the thing is, we're sitting, you know, it's kind of like a bed or a chair, right? You're using it 8 hours a day, or more, right? So I opted to upgrade that and make sure that I had a really good one. So that's my desktop build, and it's got I have two 24-inch monitors hooked up that are, you know, the 2560 by the 1440 resolution, so real high resolution, tons of real estate. That's really important to me. I have a Surface Pro 3. I actually have the exact same model that you have, and I use that for travel. And like you said, that thing is super light. I actually have the exact same mouse that goes flat, which ends up working out really good because I can pop it right into the same case that the Surface goes into. So there's times when I'm out here, like at the Microsoft campus, and I can actually just carry this thing around with the mouse. And I have a neoprene case, so I have a little bit different case than you have. And it works real good. I can even keep the pen on this thing and the keyboard. I put it in the case and my mouse with me and I'm all set. And battery lasts, you know, in many cases all day. So it works pretty good. And that's actually what I'm recording on right now. One kind of interesting thing I have, I'm going to have to find a link to the exact model that I have, but, I saw this at CES a few years ago. It's called GridIt, and it's it's basically like this, this flat thing that has like 20, elastic bands on it. And the idea is that you can put your cables in there. You can put, you know, just, I have pretty much everything in there. All my adapters for the Surface, all of that kind of stuff. I put right on the GridIt and it holds everything securely.
Accessories and you tuck them underneath the elastic bands and they're woven. So you can kind of just tuck them in any way, you know, to accommodate different size things.
Yeah. Exactly. And I get so many comments on this because what I end up doing, I pull out the Surface and then I end up pulling out the GridIt, which is basically like every accessory that's in my bag. And I just sit that down there and they're just like, wow, you're really well prepared, you know, because I don't just have this mangled mess of wires sitting in my bag. So I really, really like that thing. It adds a little bit more weight, but I think it's worth it. Another thing I always keep in there too is a microfiber cleaning cloth. And, you know, for the Surface Pro 3, having a touchscreen, these things are like magic. Like I've used like wet claws and things like that. Do you have one of these?
Yeah. And I wanted to elaborate on this because as soon as I saw it on your list just now, I carry one too, but it's not like your eyeglasses one. These are kind of like, they look like little loops are coming off of the fabric. So it's really thick and beefy. And you can take in most cases just one or two swipes and it's completely clean. So this does
like magic.
They are really good and they're a lot larger. So I know mine is probably like a foot by a foot.
Yep.
So, exactly. So they're big. You can just swipe over your screen and essentially two swipes and it's all clean and you're back in business.
Exactly. And then I have, of course, my Microsoft Band, and I know you have one as well. So I wanted to make sure I got that on the list. I think, you know, I've talked about it a lot before in the show, but basically being able to get those notifications from my phone is huge. That is just such a big deal. And it's funny because whenever you read like reviews, you know, the Apple Watch is really like the big one, but there's also like the Android Wear devices. Whenever you read through the reviews, I mean, the killer feature on all of these things is basically the notifications. And I think the Band does an amazing job at that without being too intrusive. I mean, the Apple Watch, I keep looking at it and the thing is so thick. You know, it's just this giant wart that's on there. And the Band isn't the smallest thing in the world, but it gets the job done for notifications. For phones, I always, so the two that I pretty much always carry with me, I have the iPhone 6 Plus and the Lumia 635. And that lets me cover, you know, I can basically carry with me, all the apps that Microsoft makes. There's a lot of, you know, like on the iPhone 6 Plus, there's a lot of the recent Office apps that are going to be shipping with Windows 10 are already available on there, which is pretty cool. And then, of course, I get OneDrive and Power BI and Outlook and Sunrise and a lot of these recent acquisitions all on that device. And then the 635, I use that quite a bit for Windows Phone development whenever I need to use that. It's just a nice light device. I picked it up for $40 actually, which is just absolutely insane how inexpensive that thing is. And then I also have a Moto G, and I made the mistake of, I bought one that I don't think it's GSM, but it's not the AT&T band. So it's sort of an oddball Moto G. So it doesn't have the latest version of Android, which was the whole thing I was looking for. So I think I picked this thing up for like $80, but, if you do end up getting one of these, you know, low-end Moto or Motorola devices, you got to be really careful. Make sure you get the right edition. One thing I wanted to point out too, that I think is absolutely essential, and I can't live without this now. In both of my vehicles, I go out to ProClipUSA.com, and they actually make mounts for your vehicles that are specific to that vehicle. So like I have a 2015 Mustang, and the plastic piece that snaps into it, it snaps right into the factory design. It doesn't really cover anything up, and it is so secure. It's just ridiculously secure. And then we have a minivan as well. And again, they custom designed a piece of plastic that snaps right into place. And holds you put a phone holder on there, and they have a custom phone holder for pretty much any phone that you can get, and also some generic versions. You pair those two things together, and basically when I sit down in a vehicle, I just pop the phone in, and it's within viewing range, because I typically run Waze, which is nice for trailing. It reroutes you around traffic. I mean, it's better than any kind of built-in GPS that you're going to get. So that's really important. Recently, I also got the, you know, you talked about the Anker, or I don't know if it's Anker or Anker. I don't know how to pronounce that name. But I bought, I've actually bought a couple of their chargers now. So the one I bought for the vehicles is it's a 4-port charger, and every port can put, I think, out to 10 watts. So this thing will charge tablets, phones, whatever. And if you're ever traveling anywhere, you know, with a family like me, I mean, I have 5 people, and we typically have, you know, 5+ devices in the vehicle. This really comes in handy, and it will even charge like our Dell Venue Pro or the Pro Venue 8s or whatever the order that is on there. Most chargers will not charge those devices, but the Anker devices or the Anker devices will charge anything. They are just absolutely incredible, and the build quality is just out of this world. I have the same webcam that you have. Another really useful thing that I have that's actually super expensive is a ScanSnap S1500. That's an old model. I think there's a new version of it. So you might think I'm crazy for buying a $400 scanner, but this thing is like a life-changing scanner. So what ends up happening, I'm sure you get this where you get, you know, you never get the digital copies of these, right? You get this, you get your insurance policy in the mail. I get like a 50-page document, you know, double-sided, or if you get a mortgage, they give you like those legal-sized documents. You can actually take that entire stack, you pop it in the scanner, you push the button, it will convert them to PDF. It can even do things like OCR, but it scans both sides simultaneously and creates a PDF. And then I just threw it in the OneDrive, which gives me unlimited storage. And that's actually pretty awesome. So basically any mail that I get, any statements, any documents, all get scanned in and digitized. And this, if I had to use like a flatbed scanner or something like that, it would never happen. One other thing I want to mention, headphones. So I travel a lot on a plane. So the headphones that I bought are the, what brand are they? Let me take a look here. They are the ATH M50X. They are the Audio Technicas. And I'm actually using them right now. That's why I had to look and I had to double check the the brand that I was using. But these things sound absolutely amazing. And they don't do noise cancellation because that makes me sick. But they, like literally, not figuratively. And they cut out a lot of the background noise. And they sound absolutely phenomenal. Like you haven't heard music until you've listened to these headphones. Anything I missed, Carl, or you had questions about? That was a decent rundown.
Yeah, and I'd like to just vouch again, because it's such an amazing product, that ProClip USA. I had that in my car, which I recently sold. I left it in there because, you know,
it's only good for that car. Yeah.
Yeah, essentially, but only that half. So I did leave the generic, I did have a few specific mounts for specific phones, but I left the generic mount in there for the next owner.
Okay.
But yeah, it's an amazing device, and it's great. Like if you want to have GPS up, and you can just always have it there if you don't have that built into your car.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost you $100, right? I mean, this stuff isn't cheap. You're probably going to end up putting $100 worth of stuff in your cart, but it is absolutely worth it. Yeah. It is. It's, I actually bought one that also attaches the windshield for when I travel. And what I found is the phone kind of wobbles around and it's not good. These things, like they're built so incredibly well. And again, you put in your exact model of car and the mount is for your specific model. This is not generic in any way whatsoever.
Yeah. So next we're going to talk about software that we use.
Sure. So what do you use?
So the first one is a little bit unobvious, I think, but Pandoc. I've mentioned that on the show before. It's a universal document converter. So we use that to create the show notes first and foremost. So, we export it from OneNote and it gets into an HTML format, which I use Pandoc, which I automate with PowerShell. As soon as that HTML file is formatted, automatically gets converted into Markdown. And our website, which is DocPad, takes Markdown for blog posts.
Yeah. Yeah. This tool it's like a just Swiss Army knife but converters.
It's just great because, in PowerShell, you just do pandoc-i and you give it the whatever path is to your file. So whatever .doc, if it's a Word doc, and you can convert and you do a -o for output and whatever you want to rename it to. And it uses the extension that you rename it to figure out like, oh, it's .txt. We're going to convert this to text. HTML, we're going to do HTML. So it's just super simple to use. But some of the other great uses that we've had for it is, for documentation, we needed to generate PDFs, for people to use it. And we wanted to keep, a version history of it, and PDFs don't, they're binaries in version control. So you can't do that. But what was nice is we were able to, write our documentation in Markdown, which does look good in version control history. You can see, he added this line or modified that or deleted this stuff. And then as part of the build process, we just had PowerShell execute Pandoc and generated all those docx's for us. We could just not look at those when we're checking in our stuff into source control. So, it's a really good solution for other things like that. So you can get really creative with this tool.
Yeah. Very cool. Okay. What else you got?
So like I said, I really like Markdown. So I use Markdown Pad too. And I know you use something else, but we'll get to that later. I also use Notepad++. In particular, there's two add-ons that I always add, JS tool, which has some really good JSON tree, viewing to just kind of break that apart a little bit more. And I also use the XML tools. Like if you get a string of just nasty XML, or not necessarily nasty, but it's just all in one line. It'll pretty print that, you know, it'll separate it out by lines as you would format that, you know, nicely in a, you know, in a tool editor.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
So that's nice. And that's all built in and free with Notepad++. The next piece of software is Slack. I use the Slack for Windows client, but they also have web version, Mac version, Android version. We use it at work. Actually, I work for a consulting company, so we use it both at a consulting company and my client. And there's a few other external public groups that I have. And it's just one of the main IMs that I have up and going. I really enjoy using Slack. So,
yeah, and for people that aren't familiar with it, I mean, people... There's different, you have different teams and then you have different groups within there that you can chat. And it's got a lot of, it it's very well executed, I would say.
Yeah. Next is for my personal computer, I use Visual Studio 2015, the release candidate entirely. Mm-hmm. And some of the plugins I use is Web Essentials, the Multilingual App Toolkit. If you're doing any kind of native mobile work with Windows or Windows Phone, really look at adding multilingual support. It's a lot easier than you think. And even if you don't know languages, this toolkit will help you get going with that as well. Mm-hmm. Another plugin I use is the Mindscape Web Workbench. I really like SAS. And the Web Essentials, they remove their compiling components for SAS. They still support like the syntax highlighting and all that stuff. But Mindscape does my SAS compiling for me.
Okay.
And then, of course, just to get it in yet another episode, Sidewaffle.
Take a drink.
So that's the plugins I use for Visual Studio. I also use for my Twitter client, Tweetium. I really like Tweetium because it syncs what I've already read between my different clients. So if I read up, okay. If I read up to a certain tweet on one device, I put it down, I can jump over to another client on another device and I pick up right where I left off. So that tweet syncing, and I do pay for the, I think he calls it the premium features. So the in-app purchase that he has, it's good for, I think, 6 months and you just rebuy it twice a year. Well worth it. It also gives you multiple accounts. And I not only have my own account, but I do like 99% of the tweeting for the show as well. So it just lets me quickly. There's nice. You tap on the picture, you select your other account and you see everything as if you were just that user. So it's a really nice interface for that as well.
Yep. I was wondering how you did that.
Yep. And I can respond to people pretty quick because of that, because I get notifications for both at the same time.
Okay.
So the next one is something I learned from you, Jason, Buffer.
Yep.
And what had happened otherwise is I would get all these news articles and I'd be like retweet, 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 or, you know, tweeting them out originally, but they'd be all spaced together and then you wouldn't see me for a day. And that's kind of annoying for people because they just get like a flood of stuff. So as a way to space that out, Buffer is something that's free for individuals where you can say, add this to my queue and it'll tweet it out at a specified time ranges that you specify. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but if you have something like a link shortening service like Bitly, it'll incorporate that in too for your account. So then you can also get like analytics through Bitly. So, you know, track who clicked what and how often. So you see like, oh, this was popular. And sometimes that's how we pick the news for the show is some of the stuff that I've retweeted over the week will be like, wow, this got a lot of attention. People are interested in.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That Buffer is amazing. And I was actually I did a lightning round talk talking about, you know, being public by default. And one of the things that I talked about was using this extension. And so, you know, that was, I told this to about 150 people. And I said that I used to think that timeliness was the most important thing. So being able to sort of report the news as it's breaking. But what's more important is visibility. So if something happens at 3 a.m. and tweeting about it at 3 a.m., you know, in some cases that has an advantage. But in most cases, if it's just a piece of like technology news, as an example, it's actually better to get more visibility and let people see that. And that's useful because I go on Twitter and sometimes if you've missed something, it's just gone. Like you just don't even know that you missed it. So spreading those out is huge. And also Buffer makes the tweeting experience. It makes it easier to actually tweet something because it grabs the title of the page and it's a nice extension instead of having to do a copy and paste and all that. So it actually adds a lot of value because it's easier and it's better. There's really no downside to it.
Yep. And like you said, that Chrome extension is just really awesome. It really adds or streamlines the workflow it takes to get a tweet out.
Yep.
So another part of the news gathering thing, I do get a lot of the news from what I see off of Twitter. I've kind of curated the people that I follow to be, you know, a lot of the people who just generate, you know, or highlight some of those really good news articles that I don't have a chance to get to. And what I do is when I see something like that, I may not read every single one, but I use reading lists for Windows and Windows Phone to, to tuck that away for later. And then as I have a chance, then I'll go back and read them. And if I like them, then I'll add them to our show notes or something. And what's really cool about that as well is reading list allows you to tag things. So I essentially have two tags. I've deleted all the default ones and I have one called buffer and one called podcast. And when I put things into the buffer one, that's meant for me to add to buffer later. So basically I'll click on the link. It'll show up in Chrome. I'll read through it, make sure it is something quality, and then I'll click the buffer extension and add some hashtags, maybe a reference to who originally notified me of it, and it's off in the bucket. If it's something for the podcast, I'll copy that over to OneNote.
Okay.
So that's really my key of curating the internet for the various things that I do for Twitter and for the show here without adding a whole lot of extra work to it. Because I know a lot of people, you know, they see what I do and they're like, man, that must take a lot. And I'm like, it should, but it doesn't.
I get the same thing. And it's all about just optimizing the workflow. Once you do that, it does not have to take a lot of time per day. And the thing is, I want to stay on top of this stuff anyway. So sharing it, if it's only an extra 10% of my time, of the time that it took me to actually get all of this information, it's worth that extra 10% to share it with everybody else. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. And for password management, I use LastPass. I pay the $12 a year, $1 a month for the mobile access for the mobile apps, and it is more than worth it.
I pay as well.
I use it to generate my passwords, so they're all unique and crazy. And if somebody has like we only accept 12 characters, well, then I modify it on the fly for them. And it's
don't you hate that?
If I had to remember them myself, I would have like three passwords and I'd probably use one of them for 90% of everything.
Yeah. And this actually does, it can actually do like password hygiene testing. It will tell you, you know, if you have bad passwords on existing sites, it'll sort of automatically pick up if you've changed a password or created a password on a site. And now they've recently added a feature, and I haven't done this because it seems a little scary to me, but you can actually go through a whole bunch of different sites and change your password for you. But the biggest thing for me is the auto login. So I have it set up on a lot of sites to just automatically log in. So in the morning, I'll have Chrome open up, I think about 16 tabs, and some of those require logins. And LastPass will automatically in the background get me logged in. So when I get to that tab and want to, you know, look at the information, I'm already logged in. It's so handy.
Yeah, and one that I actually an app that I just thought of that I use all the time that I didn't mention here is Paint.net. Paint.net is a great free tool that for those that don't have Photoshop or something like that, you can get, you know, a tiny portion of the features that Adobe offers for that, but you're not going to use most of them anyways. So for somebody who's not into that high end kind of photo editing or image editing stuff, but you still need like layers and, you know, fancy lassoing and, you know, just figuring out how to get some of those better image editing tools. It's just, there's no better thing that's free.
Yeah. I wish it was just built into Windows and would just replace Paint. That would be pretty sweet.
That would be pretty sweet.
Yep. Okay. Should I go through my list?
Yep.
Okay. So mine's pretty close to yours. There's, you know, so you've made my life a lot easier. So I do have Markdown Pad installed on my various machines, but I have run into some issues with it. My Surface Pro 3 is a little crazy right now because it's got, you know, experimental builds of Windows 10, but, you know, what I found out recently was that Atom.io actually has pretty good Markdown support. It doesn't show you the preview in real time, but it does have a preview of your Markdown. So I did install Atom, and I've been using that because it's just a darn good editor, and it has the Markdown preview. And I assume at some point Visual Studio Code will have that, and I'll probably just switch over to that. But for the time being, I'm using Atom for my Markdown. And then you don't get any of the nags for money or anything like that. Like, I would happily pay for Markdown Pad if I was going to keep using it. But I think Atom does a really nice job too. Some key things that I use, GitHub for Windows. One of the only reasons I put this on the list is a lot of people just don't even realize that they have the tools for Windows. And I know we talked to Phil Hack a long time ago, and, the software is really mature. It's really, really, really high quality, and it works the way that you think it should. So for really simple Git, operations, it works really good for that. Like if you want to just, clone a repo, change some files and then check them back in, like GitHub for Windows works really good for that. And when something goes wrong, it usually does a pretty good job of saying, hey, something went wrong. Here's how you fix it. So that's what I really like about it. I just like the visibility that it gives me. Let's see here. I did want to talk browsers because I know you use a variety of browsers too, but I did want to mention that I use, I do primarily use Chrome, and there's a couple of features, and I keep talking to the Edge team, and I've given them my feedback, to get these features into Edge so that I can use that. But for pretty much all my personal and most of my work use, I use Chrome. And then for anything that's like strictly work, I typically use IE. And the reason I do that is I'm logged in generally with my live ID in Chrome and with my organizational ID in Internet Explorer. So basically my work ID. And it's nice because, if I need to access like Office 365 or anything like that, I just open up IE and it works really good for that. And I'm already pre-authenticated. We talked about Buffer. We talked about LastPass. Those are kind of the key extensions that I use. In Visual Studio, the only extension that I want to add there is ReSharper. I'm a huge ReSharper fan, and it does a lot. Although, admittedly, I don't know these days how much of that functionality is actually in the base version of Visual Studio. So it's kind of hard to tell what I'm missing. But ReSharper is just absolutely incredible because it not only tells you that something is wrong, it just says like, hey, and I think this is how you should fix it. And then you just push a button and it fixes it for you. And 99% of the time, it actually does the right thing. Another tool that I use is Snagit. So for taking screenshots, this tool works really, really well. It works better than like the snipping tool that's in Windows because it'll actually snap to a window or snap to different controls within an application. It's hard to explain, but it works really good. And it also keeps kind of a history of the things that you've took screenshots of, which I found handy. I use Office quite a bit. I know it's kind of a boring pick here, but, I'm in Outlook pretty much all day it's open all day and it's super powerful. So I'm on Outlook 2016. It works really well. And I'm anxiously awaiting, the modern versions of those apps. OneNote, I couldn't live without OneNote. That's how we run the show. That's how I run like pretty much everything that I do. And another one that people sort of have a love-hate relationship with is Visio, and I use that a lot for diagramming. And it actually works just really, really well for that. And you'll see on a lot of my GitHub repositories pictures of diagrams, and I use Visio to create those. One that I've been playing with lately is the Adobe Creative Cloud. I've been using that for doing video editing. It works pretty good for that. I'm actually still trying to figure out, my trial just ended. I think I'm going to pay for it because I use Lightroom a lot. And the video editing, I think I'm going to use more and more often because I have a GoPro. I record video on there, record video on my phone. And it was actually not too bad of a learning curve. So I think I'm going to start paying for that every month. So they got me hooked. I think that's just about it. Actually, one that I just thought of, Carl, was do you still use Battery Bar on your Surface Pro 3?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. So that is a tool that I use. It's just Battery Bar, and it's free. And it's real nice because it shows you the time and the percentage of battery remaining, and it'll give you a whole bunch of stats on your battery. So I find it really useful. Okay.
One last thing that I thought of, just because I installed it on my work machine recently, is Metro Studio, by Syncfusion. And what that'll do is they've got like a few thousand Metro style icons. Mm-hmm. So, and they have a nice little editor for you to mix and match them and combine them and just kind of get some images put together, you know, most likely four icons or tiles or something, but they can be for whatever. You can export them as a XAML path or PNGs, JPEG, whatever you need, essentially. And that's really nice. One, for if you're making apps and you want to make it look a little bit more professional, it's an easy way to get something, and it's the license is completely free as well as the price. So that's really nice. And another thing, another use for it is at work. If you're just making like some little admin-y tool, spice it up a bit, give it an icon. Don't let it just have that default one. That's actually what I did it for, is I was just creating an admin-y tool. I'm like, I'm not going to be lazy. I'm going to take the 30 seconds it takes to generate an icon and put it in there. So,
yep. Okay. And since I'm, you know, finishing work here and starting my vacation, I did not pick an Azure pick of the week, but you did pick an app of the week. So what is that?
Yes, I was actually reached out by the author of this, Bailey Stein. And ever since he reached out to me with this, it was about 2 weeks ago. This has replaced my weather app on there. It's called Forecaster, the number 4, CASTR. And it's a Windows Phone application. It's got a really nice polished UI. Not only does the main screen look nice, but you kind of swipe up, down, and left, right to interact with it. And a couple of screens down, he has something called the graphical hourly forecast that, like, at that hour, it puts like the icon of what the weather will be like at that hour, and it puts it in a graph. So if you're looking at the temperature, you'll see the bar go up and down, but as well as the icon, like, well, it's going to be partly cloudy in 72 and it's going to be sunny in 73 the next hour. So it's kind of cool. And he does the same with the rain and the percentages and all that stuff too. So, I really like that. It's free, but there's also paid version to get things like more themes and notifications and a few other things as well. But I've really been enjoying it, quite a bit. So check it out.
Very cool. And I don't have the card game with me, so we're going to have to skip that. So anything else before we wrap it up, Carl?
No. Jason and I, if you're in the Northeast Wisconsin area, we do help run a local user group, too. I know that's not something that is not everybody knows and not everybody cares about, but it's Northeast Wisconsin Developer User Group. That's us and another Microsoft MVP, Greg Levenhagen. If you're not in the area and you don't want to, come check us out, go to your own local user group.
You might not even know it exists. You might, go look. Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody who didn't realize that he had one like a few blocks from him recently. And, it wasn't ours, it was somebody else's. But, the thing is, if you're listening to us, you most likely like to learn. You like to, progress your skills, and user groups are a great way to do that and network with people who could help you in other ways as well. So just a little personal tip out there, go out there, go to your user group, network. I have a blast going out to mine, not necessarily because of the content all the time, but I really enjoy the people that are there.
No, that's a great point. So where can people find you online?
You can find me online at wpdevguy.com or on Twitter at Carl Schweitzer.
Okay, and you can find me at ytechie.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/ytechie.
Be sure to subscribe by searching for MS Dev Show in your favorite podcasting app. Leave us a review at iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or your podcast aggregator of choice. Visit us at msdevshow.com where you can leave comments, check out our links, show notes, and more. Visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/msdevshow. You can send us your comments and feedback directly to feedback@msdevshow.com.